For the rest of the hour, we're going to talk about meteorites. They are more than just a chunk of rock. They can be a time capsule or ancient secrets of our solar system, maybe locked up in its core. And it turns out, I didn't know this, that one of the largest meteorite collections, the largest collection held by any university, is just up the road from us in Tempe. And joining us now to talk about the collection is Meenakshi Wadhwa. She is director of the Center for Meteorite Studies and a professor in the School of Earth and Space Exploration at ASU. Meenakshi, welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks, Ira.
Let's talk about your collection. How did you get a collection?
This is actually part of a great story, too. There's a really famous collector, an Arizonan, Harvey Nininger, who had this wonderful collection. He is probably the person who I would say was responsible for bringing up the science of meteorites to the United States. And he had this great passion for meteorites, actually in the natural world in general, but a great passion for collecting these space rocks. And he did this in the 1930s and 40s, and he had this wonderful collection, probably the best in the world. And towards the late 1950s, he actually sold, he was basically deciding what to do with it and wanted it to have a life beyond his at some point, and he sold half of it to the British Museum.
Wow.
And
wow.
So Arizona State, actually, very forward-looking at the time. This was an era when, you know, Sputnik happened, 1959,
right.
And they were thinking, well, you know, space, this is the new frontier, this is where we got to go, and they had the vision to actually buy the rest of his collection, and that's where the core of our collection comes from.
Is there a great black market in meteorites?
Oh, gosh. There is a great community of collectors and people that like to collect and buy meteorites.
Is that a euphemism for a black market?
Well, it's an interesting question. I'm sure there are people that collect meteorites in places that are where the laws don't actually allow them to collect these things. I'm sure that happens, but basically we as a community of scientists would not have some of the most interesting samples to study if there was not a community of people interested in collecting these things in places that are hard to get to. And so, yeah.
Is the big catch now the one that blew up over Russia? Are people looking for pieces? Have they found the pieces?
Yes, they have, actually. Within hours of the news, there were people converging on Chelyabinsk.
So what do you have to do to get one of those pieces?
Well, we don't have a piece of that meteorite in our collection yet.
Not yet.
But again, you know, it would be governed by the laws of Russia and whether they would be able to export those materials legally. And so I think, you know, we would obviously be concerned about all of that. But
would they go to auction, something like that? Would it something
possibly.
And what
possibly.
Would something like that fetch?
Just a
ballpark estimate.
Any known observed fall, anything that's of historic interest, naturally, just by the news-making aspect of it, has more value to it than what it would otherwise be.
Right.
I believe it's what's called an ordinary chondrite. It's one of the more common types of meteorites. So just in and of itself, it's probably not one of the rare kinds of meteorites that's out there. But, I would be hard put to put a figure on.
Millions?
Well, it depends on the piece. But I would say certainly... hundreds to thousands of dollars per gram, possibly, but
per gram.
Yes, but I as a scientist that studies meteorites, you know, it's kind of blasphemy to actually put a dollar value
on
these
things. No one's
listening,
they're all priceless, right?
They're all priceless. Exactly.
Tell us about the priceless ones in your collection. How many do you have?
We have about 18, in excess of 1,800 different meteorites. If you consider all the different individual pieces, we've got tens of thousands of pieces, but basically 1,800 or more than 1,800 different distinct meteorites. And we have there's all different kinds of meteorites. I know this is radio, but I actually did bring some samples in with me for the studio audience at least. So if anybody afterwards wants to come by and take a look at these.
You'll count them on the way out.
I will count them on the way out. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But we have in our collection all of the sort of important classes of meteorites. We have some that come from Mars. We have some that come from the Moon. Most of them come from asteroids.
But can you tell immediately by looking at a rock that it's a meteorite or not?
Most times. But I actually...
Really?
Yeah, I actually just spent 2 months in Antarctica 2 months ago, actually. I came back from there, and we were collecting meteorites out on the ice.
They're just sitting out there,
They're sitting out there. In some places, there's nothing but ice, and the only dark rock that you see, that's a meteorite. But in other places, you actually go to these moraines where there's lots of terrestrial rocks mixed in. A lot of them look dark and heavy, and it takes your eye a little bit to get trained to seeing what meteorites look like. But when you train it, when you're trained to look for these things, you can actually identify them fairly regularly and reliably.
This is Science Friday from NPR, talking with Meenakshi Wadhwa about her collection of meteorites. And which one is your most favorite of all in the collection?
Yeah, it's like asking about your favorite children. Child.
Yeah. I'm going to ask it anyhow. So.
Actually, I will say my favorite one right now is this Mars meteorite, which we got just in the last couple of months. It's one that fell in Morocco last year, and it is only one of 5 known Martian meteorite falls. And so it's the most recent one that's happened. There's not been one in 50 years.
Wow.
And so, if you want to understand something about Mars as a planet and you want to find something fresh and that's not been sitting around on Earth for very long and not contaminated by terrestrial things, this is the rock to look at.
Well, how does it get from Mars to here?
So as Eric, we heard earlier in the show, there's probably large impacts that are hitting Mars even today, and certainly in the past. And so there was a large impact on Mars sometime in the past, and it ejected these pieces from Mars, and eventually it's made its way to the Earth.
Could there be pieces from other planets?
Absolutely. So there's pieces of the moon that are meteorites that have landed on Earth. Theoretical calculations show that, in fact, there could be swapping of material between planets quite readily. And so, absolutely, there's probably Earth meteorites on the moon, for example. And that's kind of a fascinating story in itself.
Well, it is.
You might actually find ancient Earth rocks somewhere lying around on the moon.
Location, location, location.
Yes.
It's very important in meteorite. Well, but if a meteorite comes in and it's sitting here for a while, it gets contaminated by everything that's on Earth, what can you then learn from it about where it came from, or why is it important to look at it?
Yeah, so some things do get compromised when they've been sitting around on the Earth, but there are other mineral components, as well as, in some cases, organic materials in some of these meteorites that you can look at, that you can differentiate from Earth materials. So even though there are contaminations or contaminants that can affect the meteorite, there is definitely a lot of information that you can learn about these. In fact, a lot of times people wonder, meteoritics is such a small sort of niche of very specialized science, but everything that we understand about the beginnings of the Earth, everything that we understand about the beginnings of the solar system, what we're made of, what the planet's made of, the age of the Earth, all of that comes from studying meteorites. And, we can learn a lot from that.
Would they be a good topic for a novel, you think?
Absolutely. There are actually quite a few novels that have been written about meteorite impacts and, microbes being carried over here from other places. And, yes, there are science fiction books that I've certainly read very avidly about that. But, yes.
Absolutely. So what is the holy grail of a meteorite collector? What do you really wish for someday?
A piece of mercury, maybe.
Got a little in my pocket. It's a little silvery.
And liquid. It could very well happen. So that's the great thing.
Is that right?
Yeah. There was actually at this last Lunar and Planetary Science Conference, there was a talk about a possible Mercurian meteorite.
Would you know it if you found it?
That's the good question. I mean, in the case of the Mars meteorites and the Moon meteorites, we have pieces of evidence from other sciences that can relate to that, and we know that these things are fairly solid. But in the case of a Mercurian meteorite, that would be a little bit harder to do. It wouldn't be impossible. Yeah. Hopefully, there might be a sample return sometime in the future.
So there could be around us now, and we wouldn't know.
Yes, absolutely. Same thing. A piece of Venus, we might have something.
And I wouldn't even know how to look at the rocks in my backyard to tell if they were.
Exactly.
We should all bring everything we have over here.
No, let's not do that.
Well, I want to thank you very much for taking time to talk with us today. Meenakshi Wadhwa is director of the Center for Meteorite Studies, professor in the School on Earth and Space Exploration at ASU. We'll be watching for that meteorite that you got there. Thank you for taking time. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and with help today from NPR librarian Kim Mileski. We also want to thank KAET8 Arizona PBS for the use of their studios here today. And if you missed any part of our program or you want to hear about it again, you can go to our website and get our podcast at sciencefriday.com. We'll be tweeting all week at SciFry, and you can join our Facebook page And as I said before, you may have heard about some programming changes at NPR. We want to wish the best to Neil Conan and our friends at the Talk of the Nation staff. If you're concerned about Science Friday, Science Friday is not going away. We'll see you back in New York next week and every week, and we'll be here as long as you tell us that you want us to be here. Have a great weekend. If you're celebrating Easter, happy Easter to you. I'm Ira Flatow in Phoenix.